Let the Galaxy Burn. Narrated by a Border Prince. Tanabray. Chinks of reddish-grey glow filtering between eddies in the layer of atmospheric debris announce the break of dawn over Tanabray's capital. The city, known as Wormwood, had stood for the past 50 years of the 700th century of the 41st millennium. Now Wormwood was dying. The screams of men mingled with the gibbering of demons and the thunder of weapons. Upset by the warping influence of chaos, gates opening to provide access to creatures who had no rightful place in the material world, the burgeoning clouds over the city periodically rained blood, sometimes toads, upon the death-strewn streets. The old man strode with uncharacteristic haste through the looming, vaulted halls and thoroughfares of the Adeptus Arbites fortress of Wormwood's war-torn central plaza. Governor Dane Cortez reflected that the pandemonium within the building was almost as distressing as the chaos without. An aging man, he nevertheless carried his tall, thin frame with authority. His hawk-like features, coupled with the resplendent robes of his office, which billowed in his wake, lent him an air of power and mystique. This was but a well-practiced front, providing a facade of strength to a man inwardly broken and in turmoil. All around Cortez, the subjects of his planet, his charges, panicked and fled before the unholy invaders. Even now, within this very building, the Arbites struggled to order the evacuation of civilians to a heavily defended landing platform on the roof of the great edifice. This final chapter in his personal catastrophe was almost too much for Cortez's aging heart to bear, but he knew he must appear strong in the face of adversity if there was to be any hope for the survivors. Striding through the hall of his inauguration, the milling citizens of Tanabray parted to allow Governor Cortez passage. Amazing, he thought, even in the hour of my greatest failure, they continue to show me deference. At his heels, a constant two steps behind, trotted his vulpine advisor, Frayne. The snivelling wretch burbled a continuous stream of sycophantic and unctuous nonsense, which the governor had long since learned to politely ignore. As they passed underneath yet another cyclopean archway on their way to the fortified command chamber, express elevator, a commotion caught Cortez's attention in the ornate hallway. A young man had somehow wrestled the bolt pistol from the holster of one of the grim-faced Arbites. Before the security men could stop him, he sprayed his wife and their infant son, cutting them down where they stood, white-faced and terrified. As the lawmen descended on the wretch with their power mauls, he used the space cleared around him to turn the weapon on himself. The man's chest erupted into a fine red mist as he pumped the deadly explosive bolts into his own torso. Cortez closed the lift doors on this scene of carnage and felt his inner spark wither a little more inside him. The ancient elevator shuddered into life and began its rapid ascent.
"One more heretic bloodline severed, praise the Emperor," Frayne remarked in what he obviously considered his most superior fashion.
The two heavily armed guards in the lift maintained their statuesque stoicism. Cortez regarded Frayne with open disgust, earnestly hoping that the insidious man did not mistake his own expression as contempt for those poor people who now lay dead. Dead because of their superior's complacency. Because of my own complacency, Cortez mentally corrected himself. Arriving at the relative safety of the command chamber, Cortez ordered Frayne and his guards to evacuate with the rest. He would remain to put his affairs in order. Frayne protested, just enough to escape possible future recrimination, Cortez noted, but was summarily ignored. He too eagerly joined the evacuation of the rest of Wormwood's cowed administration, leaving the governor to his own counsel. The command chamber was spacious, and Cortez noted abstractly that for now at least the generators still worked. Bright strip lighting threw a sterile, artificial glare from the polished white surfaces of the fittings. Dane Cortez moved slowly towards the broad window to watch the horror unfold. Chaos and heresy engulfed his home before his stricken eyes. Cortez realized that he must present a forlorn figure, gazing wistfully from his eyrie, and he desperately attempted to maintain his tall and dignified bearing, despite the terrible events which had overtaken him. Cortez had served his time in the military, reaching the exalted rank of commander, fighting on 100 planets in a dozen systems. But with time, he had sickened of war, and in the final years of his military career, he had begun to realize that he needed a measure of peace to discover himself. By then, his influence had not been entirely insubstantial, so strings had been pulled, and the name of Tanabrae had been mentioned. Tanabrae. The planet had seemed ideal at the time, and Cortez had thought that securing the governorship would solve all of his problems. Standing at the impressive window, Cortez laughed ironically to himself. There was, after all, no one else to hear him. In the street below, the horrible hissing and popping of plasma-cooked bodies mingled with the screams of the wounded to teach the old man above the meaning of fear. Far above the streets, a cold and unhealthy train of thoughts flooded the mind of Tanabrae's ruler with uncomfortable clarity. Perhaps there is no escape, he mused, plucking absently at the ornate brocade of his cuffs. Life itself is fear. The universe is fear. And vitality itself naught but a morbid energy, fed by the joyous relief that it is the next man who is dead and not oneself. Tears flowed down the pain-racked cheeks of an old and broken man. Is fear of death the only joy of life? Shocked by his own thoughts, Cortez felt strangely ashamed by his obscure revelation, for he was yet a man with a military background and still found it difficult to surrender to fear.
Now I truly am a man alone, and yes, I am afraid, he muttered, the terror fluttered within his heart.
As explosions racked the palace, the screams of the dead and the dying reached even through the reinforced windows of his chamber. Their leader stood immobile. Cortez's eyes looked on, but his anguished mind was lost in distant thought as he tried to wrest some solace from the comfort of memory. Cortez's mind groped back through the years to the first days of his affair with Tanabrae.
A harsh mistress indeed, and given to treachery. At last,
he whispered, his mind drifting ever on. He recalled those first impressive documents, records he studied earnestly in preparation for his posting as governor and overlord. Even now, he could recite the text. It had become a shallow litany to him, bereft of all meaning, other than the comfort brought by the repetition of familiar words. Tanabrae, 45 light years from Fenris, the ancient bulwark of the Space Wolves, Tanabrae, in the Prometheus star system. Tanabrae, the planet of eternal darkness. Cortez gripped the guardrail at the window as terror washed giddily over him. In truth, he knew that Tanabrae was nothing more than a world which should never have borne life at all. Perhaps, in the very act of settling this world, the Imperium had transgressed into areas best left untouched. Unbidden, the words flowed like a prayer in sibilant mutterings from his thin lips. Tanabrae. A world a mere 180 million miles from Prometheus, a Class A supergiant which burns 10,000 times more brightly than Sol, the sun that brought life to Terra itself. Tanabrae. At some point in its eon-shrouded past, a miracle befell the scorched rock of the planet. A meteor struck, throwing a thick pall of ash and vapour into Tanabrae's thin atmosphere. Tanabrae, protected by a tender blanket of thick ash clouds from the worst of Prometheus's destructive radiations. Tanabrae, the stage was set for oceans to form and the theatre of life to perform its first acts. Cortez wiped an unsteady hand across his pale and sweaty forehead. The words brought no comfort. None at all.
Maybe it was always a trap. the hand of chaos guiding even that fateful meteorite.
The old governor stumbled from his vantage point, his mind in turmoil. Instinctively, he sought solace at his great desk, hands automatically sorting through the jumble of papers in his desk drawers, even as his mind whirled through uncontrollable planes. He smiled wanly at the mass of agricultural data before him. 10 years of research, utterly irrelevant now, just memories of better times. Cortez shuffled through the records of colonizing scientists, reading as if for the first time about the eyeless, slug-like worms which crawled in the anaerobic filth of Tanabray's shorelines. Creatures which were the planet's best evolutionary effort in the absence of sunlight. While plasma licked hungrily at the walls of his bastion, Cortez absently scanned through the lengthy reports about the sulphurous algae trees, glowing in tide pools in their own leprous light. The planetary overlord toyed with his ornate letter opener. He considered that in truth, for such an apparently drab and lacklustre world, Mistress Tanabray had proved that she harboured terrible dangers for the unwary. He considered, not for the first time, whether her proximity to the Eye of Terror, abominable gateway to the heart of chaos, had sealed her fate. Was it this which had whispered the many temptations and terrors into his dreams? And were those nightmares long established in the hearts of the dispirited inhabitants of the planet of eternal darkness by the time his governorship had commenced? An explosion rocked the palace, and a once valuable glass ornament tumbled from its marble plinth to shatter into countless fragments. Cortez barely shrugged as the spray of razor shards brought scarlet droplets to his forehead.
"Yes," he muttered. "She sold her soul. Long before my time."
A colossal, rhythmic pounding started outside. The governor's attention tore away from his reminiscences, and he scurried back to the window to see what new horror transpired in the streets below. Lumbering past the window of Cortez's shelter, with strides which easily cleared the smaller buildings, Tanabray's Emperor-class Titan pounded through the city.
"Prosperitas Lux,"
Cortez snorted ironically. It was typical to name such a war machine on a recently colonized world thus, the hopes and delusions of the people it served to defend reflected in its title. Prosperitas Lux had not been scrambled quickly enough to be effective against the invasion, and had consequently failed in its protective capacity. Now it must surely fall, along with the rest of the world.
"As with everything else in this sorry situation," Cortez moaned, "it is me, my own indecision, which is to blame."
While the problem had still been a civil matter of heretics and malcontents rioting upon the streets of Wormwood, Cortez had been unwilling to send in the guard. He preferred instead to leave such matters for the Arbites to resolve.
"Idiot, blind, stupid idiot,"
repeatedly cursing himself for a fool, Cortez came to the bitterest conclusion. The conclusion that his ineffective governorship was the primary cause of their defeat. He gazed in wide-eyed desperation as the hulking form receded from view, trying to deny the evidence of his eyes. The Titan was listening badly, flames gouting from its hull. Greenish clouds of plasma periodically vented from the carapace, and Cortez well knew that this indicated a catastrophic reactor breach. From his fortified window, the governor could see the tiny faces of the proud crew flash past, mouthing oaths of fear and anguish. He knew the machine was doomed along with all the souls on board.
"Doomed as my planet," he groaned aloud.
At last, he acknowledged that this situation was down to him, the great Governor Dane Cortez, and in the end, the responsibility had proven too much. Even now, facing utter defeat at the hands of warped creatures from the very abyss, Cortez could not stop the flood of hateful memories which assaulted his mind. Amidst the papers strewing his desk, Cortez's laden eyes fell on the long-ignored Adeptus Arbites reports of cult activity. the unbelievable reports of chaos worship, which had so swiftly burgeoned from a couple of isolated incidents in the wastelands into a full-scale, heretical rebellion, stared back at him. Undeniable evidence of his inaction. "The signs were all here, all here," he wailed, scattering the reports from his desk with a sweep of his hand. In the secret place of his heart, Cortez long knew that Tanabray bred a certain dissolution of the senses. He had felt the lassitude of the spirit, which left such sophisticated life forms as humans craving sensation. Perhaps, Cortez supposed, such a biologically primitive environment resulted in a correspondingly underdeveloped spiritual climate. Whatever the reasons, the passing of his years of governorship on Tanabray had seen the worship of the Emperor slide further and further into meaningless abstraction, and the whispers from the Eye of Terror grow ever more strident. Now the end was upon him, Cortez could see clearly why it had happened. He derived small comfort from the knowledge that there wasn't a thing he could have done about it, but that did not excuse him of his responsibilities. Cortez was certain that in the eyes of mankind he would be held culpable, perhaps even complicit, in the disaster which had befallen his planet.
"They'll make their own excuses," Cortez groaned, aware that elsewhere in the galaxy, the powers of the Imperium would doubtless create their own unfavourable subtext for why he had not undertaken the obvious and lawful course of action. That is to say, why he had not called upon the Inquisition. "Heretic Cortez," he wailed. "Cortez, thrall of chaos."
Cortez tortured himself with such thoughts of how history would perceive him, for he was yet merely human and subject to human pride. Losing Tanabray was one thing, losing his life another, but losing his name and dignity too. Slumping wearily into his great padded chair of office, Cortez remembered the day when vast baroque battle barges, covered in the hateful iconography of the Chaos Gods, had appeared from the warp to hang silently over Tanabray's atmosphere. They had rained fleets of jagged landing craft towards the planet's surface. Now the payload of those death carriers stalked the streets of Wormwood, twisted, malevolent machines and beings who left tragedy and ruin and terror in their wake.
"Why? Tell me why," Cortez implored the empty air. "This backwater planet may not mean much, but it is my home."
Despair overcame him, and anguished gulping sobs racked his aged frame.
"Why did I ever come here? Why?"
When he had been offered the governorship of this world so many years ago, he had taken it gladly. A small, backwater world of little importance. A place to be happy and untroubled. A place to put his memories of military service and the horrors he had seen behind him. It had become a place of fear and death.
"Why?"
Picking a leaf at random from the piles of reports on his desk, Cortez selected one of the many fateful reports on Tanabray's heretical activity. Yet another report which he had personally ensued the Inquisition had never received. The Inquisition, Cortez thought resentfully. If he had requested their assistance, and in truth he knew that they represented the only force in the galaxy capable of preventing events of such enormity, then he also knew he would be standing in despair at this very window again.
The cure, every bit as lethal as the disease. The irony caused his tear-stained lips to form a rictus grin, and Cortez shook his head. "The only difference lies in the fate of the victims' souls," he shouted aloud, as if addressing a rally of doubtful subjects. "If I called the Inquisition," he shrieked, "we would now be watching the grim troops of the Imperium ranging through our beloved thoroughfares, supplying absolution."
He had left the military after becoming involved in such cleansing operations, for he had come to call them by another name. Murder. Genocide.
"Oh, what's the use in any of it?" he sobbed,
crushing the hateful reports between his bald fists, ripping and shredding. Cortez systematically began the destruction of all the useless paperwork which had bound him to his desk when he should have been leading his people. His ravings were abruptly interrupted again, this time by an urgent rapping at the door of his office.
"Who's there?"
Cortez demanded irritably.
"Giselle! Captain Giselle, sir!"
A good man. One of the best. Loyal. Sanity tugged at Cortez insistently. He stopped scrabbling at the remaining papers and readjusted his robes.
"You may enter."
The captain of the Arbites curtly entered the office and stood to attention. He was a tall, solid man, dressed for battle and brandishing a bolter.
"Sir, we're evacuating the last of the civilians now, sir. You must leave now, sir, if we are to have any chance of survival, sir."
Cortez smiled weakly at the soldier, then indicated the door with a slender, wasted finger.
"You go, Jazril. You have served Tanabrae well. See to it that her people continue to prosper elsewhere,"
he said in a tired but kindly voice.
"Sir?"
queried the captain, confusion creasing his uncomprehending face.
"I will remain here. It is my duty."
The governor forced himself to stand and face the soldier with steely eyes.
"Now go, Captain. That is an order,"
he barked, some fire returning to his voice. With that, Jazril struck his breastplate in salute, turned curtly on his heel, and was away. The doors swung behind him and shut with a quiet click. Wandering over to his window once more, Cortez felt as if he was in the grip of some strange dream. His attention was once more captured by the ruined streets of Wormwood. 30 floors below, swaggering gangs of chaos-warped marines strolled among the wreckage. Their booted feet crunched on the shattered stained glass that once illuminated Wormwood's proud buildings. Any pockets of survivors they chanced upon were swept away in a vague wash of bolt gun shells, swatted like gnats. Following in the wake of the traitor Marine Corden, Cortez glimpsed a procession, of all things, approaching the plaza, a victory train of incongruous gaiety and celebration, attended by ragged heretics and capering demons. To the governor, it looked almost medieval. Here, a plague-bearer, foul demonic servant of Nurgle, dipped an infected finger into the wounds of a dying man. There, a heretic carved designs into his own flesh in the vile name of Slaanesh. At the centre of the march, an honour guard of traitors from the Word-Bearer Legion of Chaos Space Marines, 4 in all, reverently bore a large, upright metal cylinder, approximately 12 feet in height and 6 in diameter. Cortez's uncomprehending eyes took in its rich decoration, bas-reliefs of foul, warp-spawned creatures carved from an oily green rock, which filigreed the shining silver surface. Wisps of ephemeral vapour emanated from vents atop the singular device. Perplexed, Cortez watched the procession draw up outside the Adeptus Administratum building, seat of his governorship and the centre of the civil service on Tanabrae. The traitors came to a halt, and the square began to fill with the adulance of chaos. The word-bearers carried their load up the long, broad steps to the forecourt of the building. Between the majestic pillars of the entryway, now defaced with graffiti and riddled with holes and abrasions from small arms fire, the large casket was set down. Cortez viewed the events unfolding beneath him with mingled intrigue and disquiet. Something was afoot here which he did not understand, a puzzle that called to him enticing. The creed of the God Emperor had always taught unquestioning servitude, and that had sufficed for Cortez, but here, the shadow of his own mortality looming longer and longer, he wanted to at least fathom something of the nature of this forbidden enemy, his destroyer, his doom. He saw the crowd in the square stirring, becoming agitated. The governor knew instinctively that this had something to do with the contents of that dread casket.
"What is it?"
Cortez was dimly aware of the dread rising like a behemoth to join his curiosity. Far below, the roiling chaos throng waited impatiently for the coming of the thing Cortez could not see.
"Vog, vog, 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 chastise, chastise, chastise,"
Cortez was at once afraid and awfully fascinated by what could be lurking behind the seals.
"Vog, Vog,"
he mumbled, transfixed by the growing sense of the rhythm. Vacillating, nervous, he was unsure if he even wanted to know the truth at all. Perhaps it was fitting that a plunge into the unknown would draw closed the final curtain on his life. He drew a breath.
He watched. He felt ready.
A door cracked open in the graven cylinder, and a billowing carpet of vapour escaped to roll down the steps in heavy, fetid waves. Cortez quickly reached for the field glasses to better view the spectacle.
"Terminator!" he gasped, and his blood ran cold.
An armoured figure stepped over the threshold of the cylinder with a heavy, deliberate tread. The governor could see that this creature's eyes were closed, as if in a trance.
"Stasis slumber,"
he whispered, hoping for a logical and less than sinister explanation. Then recognition struck him, as if with a physical blow, and he reeled back from the hated window. In a sudden flurry of revelation, Cortez knew what transpired below.
"Vog,"
he whispered. Barely able to form the name, Cortez now remembered where he had heard the name before. This was Lord Vog, the Chastiser of Worlds, known as the Apostate of Charybdis. Vog was a notorious creature of chaos from beyond the Eye of Terror. Vog was a word-bearer priest, a twisted parody of the chaplains of the Imperial Space Marines. He was also rumoured to be a mutant, a being whose voice could loosen the veil betwixt reality and the warp.
"Bringer of demons,"
Cortez gasped, horrified that such an entity sought out Tanabray for its ministrations. With terror came a strange dulling of his senses, and Cortez was surprised to find that now he was more curious than ever, for he knew beyond doubt that Vog's presence could only signify one thing, the absolute defeat of Tanabray. The Chastiser was here to perform a victory mass for chaos. The governor shuddered involuntarily, watching Vog as though hypnotized. Slithering over the collar of his Terminator armor came a glistening, slender tentacle. Vog's head tilted back, and he inhaled sharply. The whites of his eyes showed through slits as the slimy pink limb writhed and whipped with its own unwholesome volition. An aperture on the side of the Terminator's thick neck dilated and oozed a glutinous, clear fluid. The point of the tentacle dug into the hole and began to feed its length into the apostate's neck. The skin on his throat bulged obscenely, its moisture catching glints of the weak light. Vog came fully awake when the organ was in place, embedded in his larynx. Lord Vog stepped out into the twilight of Tanabray. All eyes were upon him, and Cortez joined the chorus of his demented acolytes as a great cheer rose up from the adoring crowd. Vog scanned his congregation imperiously, his chin held high. Lord Vog radiated arrogance and pride, and it seemed to Cortez a strange nobility, every bit as impressive as the great Space Marine leaders he had encountered during his distant military service. As Vog started his address to seal the victory of chaos, the governor marvelled at the way the apostate's voice carried throughout the broad plaza. His words were at once perfectly clear to Cortez, yet somehow buried within a sonic murk which was truly inhuman. The cacophony from the apostate's mouth covered a broad spectrum of sound and was counterpointed by an eerie chanting. This sound, which might have emanated from the very pit of hell itself, redolent with the torment of a million damned souls, all came from the lips of a single man, for such was the eulogy of Pandemonium, the corrupt chorus of the word-bearer's chaplains.
"Those gullible fools who daily endure the worship of that rotting monolith, the Emperor, would do well to heed the words of Lorgar,"
Vog's voice clucked mockingly at Cortez's heart.
"We offer our worship to the true gods who govern the affairs of mortals. Not a mortal whose affairs are governed by the delusion
that he is a deity.
The discord of his address and the dreadful import of his words racked the governor's soul with its vile, atonal reverberations. Cortez doubled over, gasping, and attempted to block the unholy sound by clasping white, trembling hands over his ears. Kneeling on the sterile floor of his office, high above the ruin of his world, Dane Cortez convulsed with long, shuddering sobs of denial. It was over, and there would be no atonement for him. The tone of the address had changed, lulled by the droning, white noise of the word-bearer's pontifications. Cortez was drawn, almost hypnotically, back to the window. His attention was drawn and held by the sight of a corpse far below him. It was huddled in a corner of the forecourt where Vog was giving his speech. Yet another testimony to a tired, frightened old man's failure. The body was that of an Imperial trooper who had fallen trying to defend the Administratum building.
Rigel Kramer.
The name swept into his memory, but there was no space in Cortez to mourn one friend in the midst of such atrocity. The name seemed inconsequential. As his consciousness swam to the chant, Cortez found that he could find room to marvel at the play of light on the wet lips of Rigel's wounds.
Beauty or honour,
the old man abruptly cackled, seeing that the warm red defilement of flesh almost looked beautiful when viewed in a certain way.
Rigel,
Cortez asked, curiously, as if expecting some answer from the corpse below.
Rigel, how soon will your carmine beauty give way to the lurid hues of putrefaction? Your attractive red liquid fester into rank, black, necrotic fluids.
Cortez's wet eyes glazed over, drained of vitality and volition as bizarre alien thoughts flayed at the layers of his consciousness, sinking keen talons into his essential being.
Then what, Rigel? Answer me! I am your lord, damn you!
Cortez's fingers scrabbled in futility at the window as the chastiser's voice droned ever on.
After decay has taken hold of the sack of meat that was once you, Rigel, what then?
He wagged an admonishing finger at the distant body.
Let me tell you, young Kramer, let me tell you.
Spittle flew unheeded from the snarling lips and smeared the window.
Your thrice-damned carcass will generate new life. Oh yes, Rigel, maggots will burst from the eggs laid round your eyes and mouth, and bacteria and mould will break you down into nutrients for the humblest of plants to thrive on.
Abruptly, Cortez leapt back from the window and screamed in anguish, terror, and horror. He was appalled at the heretical train his thoughts had taken, realizing that somehow the droning voice of the false priest below had slid into his stream of consciousness, tempting him, and he had succumbed so easily. Tears of shame and loss burned on, seamed leathery cheeks.
"Oh, for nothing!" he shouted, anger beginning to blaze within his core. All this to no end save chaos.
Anguished, he was assaulted by a rush of memories. They overwhelmed him, as if eager to escape his corrupted mind. The long, fraught journey through life, the disappointments, and the fresh hopes. But most cruel of all was the opening of his eyes to the excesses of tyranny during military service. He had left the Imperial armies to become a planetary governor and use his newfound understanding to make a better life for people.
A better life. All I wanted was a better life, he sobbed, chest heaving with barely controlled misery. And this is how the mighty Imperium repays me.
This dead end. This inevitability. Cortez howled aloud. In a frenzy of violence, the old man heaved his desk over, scattering precious artifacts and ornaments to be trampled unheeded.
Oh, Emperor, where are you now? Have you forsaken me?
Regret, disappointment, terror, and misery were gone in a blinding explosion of all-consuming, inarticulate rage at this most subtle of temptations, and at just how badly he had been betrayed by uncaring fate. Bellowing like a maddened beast, Cortez pounded on the window with liver-spotted fists.
"Where is my emperor?"
he howled in self-mockery. And what succour could the emperor offer this poor tormented soul now, he thought bitterly, face reddened in helpless anger. Striding to his neatly ordered shelves, he cleared them in one swoop of his arms. The medals of the various campaigns in which he had served and the sundry paraphernalia of his office he hurled across the chamber with an inarticulate howl.
"As the traitor claimed, so you are," he shrieked, pointing accusingly towards the skies. A deluded, rotting monolith!"
The last medals clattered from his fingers with a finality that told him he no longer had any allegiance.
"Only myself now."
In that moment of deepest betrayal, of deepest loneliness, of deepest despair, Dane Cortez hated with the purity and intensity that could change worlds.
"Why have you forsaken me?" he cried challengingly. "Why?"
Red, shifting haze started to appear within the room. Cortez stared aghast, yet transfixed, as the fabric of space and time dislocated. Carnal smells assaulted his nostrils as shifting, nebulous figures coalesced within the gathering miasma.
"No!"
he shrieked, his shrill voice an entreaty to the uncaring gods of both chaos and men. An awful, eerie, mocking laughter ballooned within his skull. His only answer. A warp gate was opening. Too late, Cortez realized what he had done. By the act of resisting the temptation he had been subjected to, the violation of his maddened thoughts had opened the way for the crazed servants of Khorne, the lord of blood and war. The one faction missing from the assault on Tenebrae had come in full glory. Crimson light glowed eerily as the gate widened, allowing sleek, red-skinned humanoid figures access to this dimension. Heavily muscled and fearful in aspect, they stepped into the chamber, uncertainly at first, as though unfamiliar with the sound and textures of this realm. Cortez backed away, mouth agape, choked with stark terror. Cruel mouths were filled with rows of carnivorous glistening fangs. Nostrils flared wickedly as they smelt his mortality. Blazing demonic eyes fixed him with a predatory glare. There was to be no escape from that malign intelligence or the bloodlust so driven by it. The bloodletters wielded serrated black swords which were enchanted with the power of death, fit to reap a harvest of souls for their lord. The old man scrabbled at his belt for the las pistol as the snarling fiends shook themselves free of the fading warp gate. Grinning in terrible anticipation, they loped towards the heavy wooden desk. Long tongues flickering down to the base of their chins in expectation of the soul kill. Cortez knew without a flicker of doubt that he was about to die.
"And for what?"
he lamented, gibbering in near mindless terror. Death stalked ever closer, and he was overcome by a sulphurous blast, the infernal reek of Hades. To die for the Imperium, unwieldy and uncaring behemoth, which would have soon put him to the sword had he approached them for help.
"No!"
he cried, and the bloodletters hissed appreciatively. A tang of terror was such a sweet morsel. Then for the foul abominations released by his very own weakness?
"No, never that!"
Cortez shrieked, backed hard against the far wall of his chamber. As the demons approached, bearing his doom on their wicked blades, a solution began to form in Cortez's anguished mind. Against all odds, the governor found a new strength of resolve within him. He determined it would be neither. Not the Imperium, nor chaos. The answer was obvious. So obvious that he smiled even as he unlatched his holster flap. So obvious. The demons paused momentarily, confused by the unexpected change of emotion. Fear, they knew. Terror, they relished. Confidence, they despised. The delay was enough.
"For me," he whispered.
Before the demons could strike, Dane thrust the muzzle of his ornate las pistol into his mouth and depressed the trigger. Against all the odds, he had escaped. Finally, he was at peace. Thanks very much for watching, everybody. Please remember to give the video a like and subscribe if you're not subscribed. More of these stories and lore and other stuff will be coming very soon. If you'd like to support the channel, please use the links below, like these good chaps here have. Thanks very much, and I'll see you next time. Cheers.